Hello, this is Donna Reed reading to you from the Illinois Radio Readers. We're going to be reading today, Monday, October 8th, from Sunday's paper, Sunday, October 7th of the Commercial News here in Vermilion County. Let's look at the front page news. An article, Ring Those Bells, Salvation Army Already Preparing for a Holiday Fundraiser. This is by Carol Rome, Danville. Christmas might be more than 2 months away, but those involved with the Danville Salvation Army already are gearing up for their busiest time of the year. Lieutenants John and Faith Woodard have started planning for this year's Red Kettle Campaign, the Danville Corps' biggest fundraiser of the year, and seek volunteers to ring bells as well as paid bell ringers during the busy holiday season. The Danville Salvation Army's overall goal for this year's campaign is $110,000, which is an increase of $10,000 compared with last year's goal, and covers the local Corps' day-to-day operations for a year, including social services, programming bills, employees' pay, food pantry, Christmas baskets and clothing vouchers, and help citizens pay for utilities, rent, or shelter and medicine. Of the $110,000 goal, about $60,000 comes from the kettle donations, Lieutenant John Woodard says. Mail appeals, grant money, United Way money, and other donations make up the remainder. The total goal is up because things are costing more, he says. The Corps at 855 East Fairchild Street, a United Way of Danville area agency, hopes to sign up many volunteers to help ring bells and hire as many as 20 paid bell ringers, some part-time, some full-time, for the Red Kettle campaign when it starts November 17th. This year, paid bell ringers will be compensated more than minimum wage, but will be expected to pass a background check and be reliable. Our hours are going to be different as well, Woodard says. The paid and volunteer bell ringers are needed between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. from November 17th to December 23rd to man 8 kettle sites around Danville and Tilton, as well as the Family Dollar in Georgetown on the weekends. The kettles are at both doors of Danville's Walmart and won't be set up until November 23rd, the day after Thanksgiving. In addition to the Danville Walmart and Georgetown kettle sites, the other kettle locations will be at County Market on North Vermilion Street and in Tilton, Big R on North Vermilion Street, and in Tilton Walgreens on Fairchild Street and Big Lots. When I came here 4.5 years ago, we had 13 kettle locations, Woodard said. One of the county markets closed, so that's going to affect our goal. But the people of Danville have always been benevolent to us, he said. As for the volunteer bell ringers, Woodard said either an 8-hour or 4-hour bell ringing shift would be optimum, but he would welcome volunteer help for any amount of hours. We would love for them to do a 4-hour shift. We prefer a 4-hour shift even if they have a different volunteer doing 1 hour at a time, he said. But if someone wants to ring bells with their kid for an hour, we can accommodate that too, he said. The application process for paid bell ringers will begin Monday and continue throughout the Christmas season. Bell ringers will be paid $9 an hour and on an as-needed basis between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. To help each reach its goal, the Danville Salvation Army also is seeking community members to sponsor red kettles that entail signs with the names or logos of local businesses, churches, or families being placed next to one of the Corps' 9 kettles in exchange for a sponsorship donation or a match of the funds collected in the sponsor kettle on that particular day. Businesses can sponsor a kettle for a day for $100 or match that day's collection, Woodard said. The Danville Corps also seeks local businesses that will be set out a mini red kettle on its counter for collections. The core has six counter kettles, and last year La Pozzina and one of the local Caseys participated in the counter kettle program, Woodard said. The counter kettle program. Woodard said he is optimistic about this year's Red Kettle campaign. Danville always steps up and supports us, he said. This is Donna Reed as we continue reading the Vermilion News here for Monday. Looking at Sunday, October 7th edition, we're going to look at a few obituaries in our paper. Rayfield Johnson. Rayfield Ray Johnson, 93, of Danville, Illinois, passed away Friday, September 28, 2018, at Granville Manor in Tilton. A celebration of Ray's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 10th, at sunset. Cindy Sue Bailey. Cindy Sue Bailey, 59, of Danville, passed away Thursday, October 4th, 2018. Visitation will be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday, October 8th, at Papp Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. Services will follow at 1 p.m. Karen De La Vega. Karen R. Parker De La Vega, 66, passed away peacefully at home in Hendersonville, Tennessee, on September 12, 2018, after a courageous 10-year battle with breast cancer. As her wishes, Karen was cremated, and a celebration of life will be 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, October 14th, at the Mount Haven Mansion, 1017 Antebellum Circle, Henderson, Tennessee, 37075. A memorial service is planned in Georgetown, Illinois, and details will be announced later. Marcia Tuggle. Marcia Tuggle, 62, of Danville, passed away at 12:32 p.m. Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. A celebration of Marcia's life will be at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 9th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. A visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday at that funeral home. Louetta Sue Lovelace, Westville. Louetta S. Hammond Lovelace, 76, formerly of Georgetown, Illinois, and who had been residing at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman, Illinois, went to be with the Lord at 7:58 a.m. Thursday, October 4th, 2018. Friends may call noon Eastern Daylight Time Monday, October 8th, until services at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at the Moss Funeral Home, Attica, Indiana, with Minister Drew Minster officiating. Burial will follow in Salem Cemetery, east of Attica. Peggy Mason. Peggy Antonia Mason transformed from this life to glory, surrounded by her family at 2:45 p.m. Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018, Danville, Illinois. Peggy will be cremated upon her request. A memorial service will be at 1 p.m. Monday, October 8th, at Winter Park, Danville. William Henner. William E. Bill Henner, 85, of Ocoee, Florida, and formerly of Georgetown, Illinois, passed away Wednesday, September 26, 2018, at Brookdale Assisted Living in Ocoee. A private memorial service will be in Florida. Memorial contributions may be made to Georgetown Historical Society, Post Office Box 14, Georgetown, Illinois, 61846, or Cornerstone Hospice, 2445 Lane Park Road, Tavares, Tavares, Florida, 32778. Mary Lou Huckstad. Mary Lou Huckstad, 87, of Danville, passed away peacefully at 2:40 a.m. Thursday, October 4th, 2018, with her family by her side. A memorial service will be noon, Monday, October 8th, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 1930 North Bowman Avenue, Danville. A private family burial will take place at Danville National Cemetery at 10 a.m. Tuesday. Diana Mills, Danville. On October 4, 2018, Diana Lynn Mills, devoted mother and grandmother, passed away peacefully surrounded by her loving family. A memorial service will be at 5 p.m. Monday, October 8th, at Faith Church of Christ in Danville. Funeral services and crematory in Tilton is assisting with the family. This is Donna Reed. Let's continue reading from the Vermilion County News. Reading to you today, October 8th, from October 7th's edition. Article entitled Helpers Buy Books for Students by Isaac Smith, the Carbondale Southern Illinoisan. Carbondale. In an effort to put brand new books in the hands of her third grade students, Brooke Crombar asked her friends on Facebook to sponsor her kids, and she got enough money to buy a new book for each month for each person in her class. The Thomas school teacher said she got the idea from another teacher friend. Crombar posted on social media asking her followers to sponsor one child. She was asking for a class of 20 total to receive one book per month at $9 each. Her request was filled in 2 hours. In a news release, she said the Scholastic book orders were always an exciting part of her school year. The company sends a flyer several times a year advertising books to students at different grade levels, but she knew that it wasn't exciting for every kid she teaches. Many students know they won't be able to order books, so the book order can be disappointing when they receive it, she said in the release. These are the students she was thinking of most. In the release, she said that some kids check books out from the classroom library daily because they don't have books of their own at home. It's difficult when the orders come in your classroom and some students have a pile of books to take home while others have nothing. Those students are likely to be the ones who need books the most, she said in the release. This started to change September 10th, the day the first order of books came. Crombar said she left it a surprise that each kid would be getting a book from Scholastic Book Order. I couldn't actually get them passed out fast enough, she said of her students' excitement. This month's read was Megan McDonald's Stink Hamlet and Cheese, which is part of a popular young readers series. She said this program is made possible in part because of the $1 book options Scholastic puts in each flyer. She said each month all 16 students get a copy of the same book from this list. While Crombar admits differentiation in education is crucial, the concept that students come at all levels and should be met there by their teachers, she's very happy because it's books in their hands. Social media posts like Crombar's were a very popular trend among educators this last year. It's been wonderful, she said, to see the support. But there's a flip side. Teachers are going to extreme measures and crowdsourcing in order to provide their students with the tools they need in the classroom. These tools aren't fancy iPads and other pricey tech. They're things like pencils, folders, and glue. Crombar was quick to point out this isn't the district's fault. They do the best they can with what they're given. Spending her own money is so common to Crombar, she said she barely thinks about it anymore. Over the weekend, I spent $70 of my own money, she said, of getting supplies for her classroom. She said this shouldn't be the case, but she does what she needs to do for the students she serves. I'll do it for the kids, she said. Looking ahead to next year, Crombar said she would, without a question, be doing the Book a Month program and will be again trying to find a way to fund it. It's all worth it, though. One example summed up why. Crombar said when she told the kids they got to keep the books, she had one boy look at her and ask a one-word question, "Forever?" Crombar has been teaching for more than a decade, and she said things like this still bring her to tears. She just hopes she can shed them privately. Clerk warns about scam. Vermilion County Clerk Kathy Jenkins recently announced residents have reported receiving phone calls impersonating an organization that provides voter registration assistance and mentions her office and her name. There have been reports of similar calls occurring in other election jurisdictions, according to a release from Jenkins' office. The callers asked the recipients whether they wanted to register to vote or request an absentee ballot over the phone. The Vermilion County Clerk's Office does not solicit phone calls, nor will it ever call residents to ask them to register to vote. These calls raise the possibility of voter confusion or follow on malicious activity, according to Jenkins. Those who provide information to the callers will not be registered to vote, potentially causing a large number of unregistered residents to appear at their local polling place on election day. We encourage any resident that has received such a phone call to report it to our office immediately. In addition, voter registration requires residents to provide significant personal information, such as date of birth, physical address, or partial Social Security numbers. It is unclear at this time if the callers requested sensitive personal information required for registration. If provided, this information could be used to attempt fraudulent voter registration or conduct financially motivated identity theft. Jenkins cautions residents about giving any personal information to any caller for any reason. For questions, contact the Vermilion County Clerk's Office at 217-554-1900. Here's a story about Alvin Fun Days, and it has three colorful pictures: a child getting her face painted, someone in costume, and someone playing the guitar on stage. It says, Alvin Fun Days attracted all ages and offered fun activities for all. More than 160 items were donated to be raffled, with proceeds divided between the families of Blake Kennett, who suffers from adrenoleukodystrophy, and Rachel Link, who was in a car accident in 2016 that left her paralyzed from the rib cage down. Also offered at the festival were music by Julia Silvers, Black Locust Band and Mason Jar Band, basketball, softball, bag tournaments, bounce houses, joyful bubbles, cake walks, merchandise vendors, and food vendors. Sounds like DACC receives manufacturing grant, Danville. Thanks to the diligent pursuit of Danville Area Community College manufacturing professor Todd Flessner, the Gene Haas Foundation has given a $10,000 grant to the Danville Area Community College Foundation for scholarships in manufacturing. The gift will fund 10 $1,000 scholarships for the 2019-2020 academic year, according to DACC. Application may be made through the DACC Foundation Scholarship Program beginning mid-December 2018. Every year, the Haas Foundation selects and awards grants to educational institutions across the world. The grant funds may be used for tuition, books, small tools the students are required to purchase, and testing fees, like National Institute of Metalworking Skills credentials. The awards are available to students majoring in advanced manufacturing, machining, and manufacturing engineering technology. Previously, the Haas Foundation awarded a $2,000 grant to DACC for use in the 2018-19 academic year. Two $1,000 scholarships were awarded. In 1999, Gene Haas, founder of Haas Automation and Company, established the Gene Haas Foundation to fund the needs of the local community. Haas Automation and Company, founded in 1983, is America's leading builder of CNC machine tools. Haas Automation is now a $1 billion-a-year company. This extraordinary growth has come in an era when Americans were being told that the United States doesn't manufacture anything anymore. The goal behind this scholarship program is to attract more students to manufacturing careers. Sad farewell to a fine furry friend. There's a little mound of brown earth in the backyard now next to the purple phlox blossoms. There lies Sammy, the best little dog that ever was. The end came gently on September 29th. But Lori and I know that somewhere he's chasing his orange rubber ball, eating a Sonic hot dog, going on walks, sunbathing, and charming everybody. We adopted Sammy in April of 2015 during a really tough time. Within the course of 3 months, my brother died, my mother died, two childhood friends died, and Minnie, the dog we had had for 13 years, died. When we saw Sammy's pathetic little mugshot in the Humane Society's newspaper ad, well, we had to meet him. It was love at first sight. Sammy was unique. Since he was a stray, no one knew his age, but the shelter thought he was about 10 years old. He was part Jack Russell Terrier with maybe a little Fox Terrier mixed in there, with wiry white fur that gave him the fuzzies. His intelligent little face was mostly white, framed in black and gray. He had no tail. His only good eye was big, round, and bright. We were told that he had been abused, which explained the blind right eye, the bump on the bone of his eye socket, and the ridge around his neck caused by a too tight collar. He had spent 3 months in a cage at the animal shelter before a college student took him home for 2 weeks of foster care. Lori and I have had dogs throughout our married life, starting with Molly, progressing to Pika, Sally, and Minnie. Sammy had that certain something. From the start, he was Mr. Personality. Super friendly, sweet, frisky. He wanted to be petted and played with and be adopted. As soon as we brought him home, he immediately bloomed. Everybody loved him, and he loved everybody. Everything was fine until the spring of 2017, when we noticed a lump on the outside of his left leg near the shoulder. At first we thought it was a cyst, but when it grew larger, we took him into the veterinary teaching hospital at Purdue University. It was cancer. We were given two options, amputate the leg and part of the shoulder, or begin radiation treatments, which might give him another 6 months. For us, amputation was out. Sammy was so terrified at the hospital, we didn't want radiation either. Instead, we brought him home and let him live out his life. The tumor grew, but he was never in pain. For a year, he still played ball, sat on the couch, went on walks, and snoozed on his little pillow. Even in his prime, Sammy only weighed 10 pounds. In the last 3 months, he started losing weight, growing weak, and failing. Finally, we had to have him put to sleep. So long, little guy. We sure miss our boy. Until we meet again, play ball. We sure miss him. Danville native Kevin Cullen wrote this. He's a former commercial news reporter. here in Vermilion. Strength, calmness, and joy. The letter was mailed by Jewel White from France, July 8, 1917. The World War was raging in Europe, and he was among the many Americans who had volunteered to assist the Allied forces battling Germany. When the United States entered the war, he already was aboard a ship on his way to Europe. In the letter he wrote, I ran across this little quotation in a book entitled Just Being Happy, which is certainly a fine article for one in my position. The letter was written to Francis Pearson Meeks of Danville. White noted the book was his second favorite volume, observing his first was The Little Testament You Gave Me. The book was included in items he received in a comfort bag from Clora Necht, K-N-E-C-H-T, and Bernice Acri. In his letter, he had first spelled Clara with a C, but the young soldier corrected his spelling. The quotation he was referring to ended with the words, It is not defeat and wretchedness which comes out of the storms of adversity, but strength and calmness and joy. He underlined these words, strengthness, calmness, and joy. There had been adversity in White's life prior to his time on the battlefield. He had lost both his parents at an early age. He was fortunate he had a mentor for whom he was named, William Jewell, a Danville newspaperman, became his guardian and looked after White until after his parents' death. The Jewell White Veterans of Foreign Wars, Post 728, honors and perpetuates his name. The young airman also is remembered when one of his century-old letters comes to hand, a fragile envelope with a hopeful message. This is Donna Reed saying goodbye for today, October 8th. Looking forward to reading with you again soon. Have a good day.